Andrew, it's Stu from Fancy Boy. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. I'm here with Jonathan Schuster as well from the show.
G'day.
Hey.
I'm adding in Henry now, and then I'm just Greg as well.
Hey.
That's Henry.
Hey, sorry, I'm just getting I'm plugging my microphone in.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, cool. Today we're talking about Fancy Boy, the Australian sketch comedy show that has been described by themselves as, quote, an itch that starts out small, but quickly becomes a weeping sore, and soon there's not enough antifungal cream to go around. So, you know, I think that pretty much sums it up. You can turn off the podcast now. But if you do keep listening, welcome to the CSOC Show. I'm Andrew Stephen.
Stu, you're the most affable. Why don't you commence?
Okay, sure. Hello, my name's Stu Dorman. I'm in Fancy Boy. And I
have a beard in it.
Yeah, I have a beard in it, in the show.
Retake.
Hello, my name's Jonathan, and I'm the cute one of the show. I wear a lot of glasses, and I have the lisp.
I am Greg Larson, and a title.
My name's Henry. I'm a writer and performer in Fancy Boy, and I actually take podcasting very seriously. I think it's the next great medium.
I guess to get started, if I'd love to know sort of how you all met and started doing comedy together.
Okay. Well, Henry and I started doing comedy together in 2008 when we met working at a visitor information center, a tourism information center.
Me and Greg started making videos together. And what then? Jonathan Schuster was a known stand-up comedian, a young known stand-up comedian. You'd say that, wouldn't you, Schuster?
Bit of hype.
He had a bit that went big amongst comedians on YouTube. It was his famous stunner meal bit. It was like a joke about Hungry Jack's, which over there is Burger King.
The Skype connection kind of cut out, but here in the US, we might know Hungry Jack's as Burger King.
Thank you. I'm good. How are you? That's good. I'm loving life at the moment, but I've actually got some problems because I think I have stunner meal syndrome. And if you don't know what stunner meal syndrome is, I bloody love stunner meals. They're my favourite. They're my favourite things in the world. And if I get $5, I'm instantly. If you don't know what stunner meal is, it's you go in a Hungry Jack's with a $5 note, and then you put your $5 note on the counter, and then they give you a burger, a chips, a drink, and a sundae for $5. $5, and you get a burger, a chips, a drink, and a sundae, and it's damn great. Except it does have cause a few problems with my social life because. I go to real restaurants as well, and when I buy a meal, I got a pasta the other day, and it cost $20, and I couldn't enjoy it because the whole time I was thinking that that's four stunner meals. And I didn't even pay for drinks. It was $20 just for the pasta, so I then had to add extra money on the drinks. Stunner meals, $5, right? Sure, you get sick once in every six times you go there, but for five, bloody unbelievable. Just, I don't think I'm ever going to get married because I found out lately that the average wedding costs $20,000. That's 4,000 stunner meals, guys. If you had a stunner meal every day of your life, 4,000. That's about 12 years of stunner meals. I don't know about you, but no one on earth is worth 12 years of stunner meals. I don't really have a punchline, so I'm just going to do this.
And I saw that clip and I was like, who is this Schuster? He's talking about stunner meals, talking about all the things that I know and love. we met Schuster through stand-up. I don't know if you ever came to Brisbane, Schuster, or if we met in Melbourne, but we met through stand-up, and then we met Stu through stand-up as well. And the same goes for Cambo. Like, everyone was just meeting through doing stand-up.
Well, it's all, yeah, we were all pursuing, I think all, you know, individually and together in different forms, all wanted to do, you know, TV stuff and all making sketches on, you know, just on YouTube and stuff. And then we came together and did a live show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival one year, 2014, I believe it was. And we'd all individually and sort of together done sketches in various forms. And we did the sketch show at the comedy festival that was a sort of a bit of a breakout success, I think. I think I could describe it as that. We didn't expect anyone to come, and we ended up adding a lot of extra shows. And
I saw Greg and, like, you know, Henry and Canva and stuff like that working on stuff where, like, they would go and try it in rooms and stuff, and it would just bomb. But I thought it was just so funny. Like, I loved it. And then, like, 3 days before the show, Greg called me and he goes, "Oh, do you want to MC the show?" And I was like, "Absolutely. Like, it works. I think it's funny. Like, I'm so sick of, like, just being involved in comedy where it's so kind of, like, scripted. You have to hand in a script, and then – because this felt really free and really fun. And then that's what I think a lot of the audiences drew off that. And then within the first weekend, we sold out our first show on that weekend, and we added something like 15 shows.
Yeah, so the program you guys have now was – the end result of a 3-year process that the local broadcaster here sort of allowed people to work towards. We were, like, given a small sum of money to make some sketches that were just standalones. And then from that, we were given a little bit more money to make a pilot episode. And then following that pilot, they approved us to make a series. So I guess from the start, like from the sketches onwards, the goal was, knowing that the end game for the channel was to put TV shows on, the goal was always to get one of those spots. And I guess just through whatever it was, our tone and our style, and then maybe our hustle or whatever. And certainly the success of the live shows we were doing was a big factor in that too. We were able to be victorious in that pursuit.
What did the live shows look like compared to this TV show?
The first live show we did was it was kind of in a pretty I don't want to say dingy pub, but it wasn't. It certainly wasn't a theater.
It was recently refurbished. Put it that way.
Yeah.
It worked well as well, because you were wanking up babies, Greg. Not literal babies, but dildos attached to dolls. And I think that worked for the look of the place.
I'm not sure if you could catch that, but yes, their show had dildos attached to baby dolls.
Yeah, definitely. It looked really bad. And the fact that our show was such a shambles and such a sort of chaotic show, that added to the aesthetic. And I think a lot of people thought it was intentional. And it was, you know, we had, like, you know, the stage lighting was pretty much just a lamp. You know, there was a black sheet up the back, and we had a PowerPoint projector where you could see the background of the computer screen. And it was a lot of fun. It was crazy. And we probably had an equal number of, like, people loving the show and also people walking out and demanding a refund.
No, we didn't have an equal number.
No, not an equal number, but there were a few.
There were significant walkouts, but there was voluminous positive responses.
Yeah, that's true.
Forgive my ignorance, but what is sort of like the comedy scene like in Australia? I know that's a broad term, but like...
What are dingoes?
I'm just imagining, like we have in LA, probably an abundance of theaters and clubs, but there are places you can go knowing, okay, I'm going to see sketch comedy, or I'm just going to see stand-up, or I'm going to see improv. Like, was that a thing, or was it just sort of like, we're going to this, like you said, this well-used bar to just entertain people, and you know, they're not sure what they're going to expect?
Yeah, it's all built around, there's a significant sort of, I suppose you'd say, spike in comedy in the year that's built around the Melbourne Comedy Festival in particular. But there's like, most major cities now have comedy festivals. And that's sort of a lot of the time what the scene is sort of built in support of. Like, they're big month-long, basically conferences where people put on shows for the month. They have awards, you know, people, big US or any international acts come out and play them. And then throughout the rest, so those, and that's sort of April, March, May kind of time in the year. And then the rest of the time, the comedy scene's mostly, I'd say mostly stand-up driven. There's not a huge improv community in Australia. There is a bit. And there's, it's of quite mixed quality, but then so too is the stand-up. So I shouldn't just declare that improv here is either here nor there. It's just whoever's doing it is what determines whether it's good or not. But yeah, it's mostly based in major cities. There's very little, there's occasional regional touring, but that's not really much of a thing. Like, you kind of have to be super famous to do a big on the road tour, or just get booked to say these guys will go and do like a ski resort town where they're just looking for a little town that has a lot of sort of seasonal tourism that's just looking for any entertainment, will put on shows, and that happens. But it's typically skews, it's stand-up heavy, and it's built around capital cities, and there's less sketch than there is stand-up, and there's less improv than there is stand-up, and there's certainly no specific sketch theatres or specific improv theatres. If you want to do something that's outside of the construct of stand-up, you'll most likely be doing it on a stand-up stage.
What was it like? What was it like working together? Because it sounds like, I mean, you kind of came, how long to when you guys came together to when you put up your show? Was there, because it sounds pretty quick.
But that show, it's like, we shouldn't be where we are now. The show that we were most famous for, we've been the most rewarded for the thing that we worked the like least amount on. I think I don't live in Melbourne, I live in Sydney. I got there to do the show like 5 days before. We sort of knew what we were going to do, but we're just working it out. And by working it out, I mean, we're sitting in these guys' backyard, just everyone chain smoking and saying like, oh, what about this? What about this? And then we'd like just get on our feet and fuck around. 3 days before, we asked Stu to do it. And then during it, we got Schuster to be involved. So we maybe should have worked harder, but then also we kind of did the exact right thing somehow, because we went from 7 shows, like Sue said, changed to 22 shows, and we won an award, which shouldn't really matter, but it's kind of pretty sick.
Well, I think the main thing is as well, is a lot of the stuff that we did in the live show was stuff that we had sort of done or thought of individually. Like, it wasn't just that it was created from nothing. It's like, you know, I had a few characters and we all had a few like little ideas and bits that we had sort of maybe done individually or around the place. And it was more a case of like we came up with some new stuff, but we also put together some stuff that we'd sort of been working on individually and just put it all together in this show. So it was something that sort of came together fairly quickly, but I would say it sort of came from us individually having a bit of a back catalogue. And also I think we benefited from the fact that we didn't have much time to prepare, because we didn't have a chance. Like, I think if we'd really spent too long on it, we would have overthought it, and there definitely would have been bits within the show that we would have thought, oh, that's too dark, or that's too, you know, absurd, maybe we shouldn't do this. But we didn't have time to second guess ourselves, so I think that's what really helped in the end, was that we didn't second guess ourselves and we just kind of went for it and just did whatever we thought was funny without worrying.
So how do you translate the energy from the live show to the TV show?
Yeah, you can't make a show in 5 days and have no time to overthink it. We did as much. I think like maybe something that we were doing in the live show that we brought to this was just always fucking around. And where we couldn't, like, on set we could, we had a pretty tight schedule. There was improv and there was sort of riffing and playing in the scenes and on set, but we, like, the turnaround on it was so much that we didn't have a heap of that. I think where we were able to, like, be ourselves and fuck around the most was just while writing it. And I think that the spirit of what we're doing on stage, which was sort of grown out of just an admiration of each other's weird and dumb and crazy bits, and then just the, I don't know, spontaneous absurdity and obscurity that, of things that we would just come up with.
Yeah, the spirit of the writing room, I found definitely in the first, because we had a 2-week kind of like throwing ideas against the wall kind of period where we could then go away for 3 weeks and then come back. There was always a time where you could pitch an idea, you know what I mean? Like, that's similar. I think if you could take that from a sense from the live show, I mean, if you came up with an idea, or we had like a guest come in like during a show and pitch us an idea while having a beer after the show, we could always bring that in, you know what I mean? Like, we always can that there was always an opportunity to bring in and keep it fresh for us, because if it's fresh for us, that definitely comes up, like, across not only in the performances but also the writing as well. So, like, I mean, that was the original, like, the charm of, you know, these guys doing the stuff, and also why I was so keen to get involved in the live show. And now I'm lucky enough to be involved with a bunch of these guys in the film stuff, is because it always has been seen. It always seems fresh, and it always seems like you're pushing. And that's what I've definitely taken from the live show, and well, I guess what we've tried to implement in that's what our head writer, I think, tried to do anyway in the writing process leading up to this series. So yeah.
Like, what are some other Australian comedians or comedy that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, I mean, like, Anne Edmonds, who's part of, she's essentially part of Fancy Boy. She's one of the core cast. She's one of the best comedians in Australia, both as like a character comedian, you know, in, you know, Fancy Boy, and she's also got her own web series coming out soon. But as a stand-up comedian, she's also probably among the very best in Australia.
Do you know Claudia O'Doherty?
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's the best. Yeah. I mean, it's like, we don't even need to say anything about her. But she is cool because she just bailed and now is famous for being awesome in America. But
there's also one of my favourite sort of groups or duos is Kate McLennan and Kate McCartney, and they do a show called The Catering Show, which is really funny. And I think it is available in America. I know that they've recently gone there for some kind of tour. But
the last one I would say is a program called Danger 5, which is like a has 2 seasons, and it was made in Adelaide, and it's like a parody of Thunderbirds and 1960s spy shows. And then the second series is like a ongoing parody of 1980s action movies. And it's pretty dope. It reminds me heaps of, like, you know, Eagle Heart or something.
Yeah.
It's like, each episode is uniquely obscure, but they all, especially that third season of Eagle Heart, that's like all one long, basically a movie. That's what the second season of Danger 5 is like. It's like a long, cut up 80s action. Love it.
That's good. I'll have to check all those out. Thank you so much for being on the show. If you want to know more about Fancy Boy, you can.
I mean, yeah. If you, I would say, like, A, watch the show on CISO. B, if you like the show, maybe tell a couple of people that you like the show and tell them, hey, get on this CISO and have a look at Fancy Boy. Just tell a mate, is what I'm saying.
And tweet at us, like we always, and also Facebook, like we're on the Facebook and the Twitter. Like if you get in contact, we'll get back in touch with you.
All this is so desperate.
Bye, mate.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to y'all.
Yeah, you too.
Evening.
And thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the CISO C Show. Take care. Bye.
Andrew, in America, like, because what you call Burger King, we call Hungry Jack's. I don't know if you know that. That's a little bit of trivia.
I think Hungry Jack's sounds better than Burger King, honestly.
Yeah, Burger King sounds like you haven't put too much thought into it. You've just gone, oh, I saw burgers, I'm the king. Like, yeah, I'm Burger King. Hungry Jack's is like, who's Jack? Like,
we do have Jack in the Box, though.
Oh, yeah. I've visited a Jack in the Box myself in Los Angeles.
Ooh, fancy!
And I had a good time.